Well, good day and welcome back to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and we are going to be talking about one hot topic in the news this week on the show, because we're going to be covering the topic of Ebola virus and the worries about outbreaks here in the United States and indeed around the world. So stay tuned for that. We're hopefully going to be bringing in my co-host, Sam Bradley, later on in the show. She had some things going on at the time of our recording, and she might be able to get in for the last portion of the program. But that doesn't mean we aren't going to cover a good topic one way or the other. And we're going to start off with welcoming back our good friend, Dr. Joe Holly from Paragon Medical Education Group. And Joe, it's going to be a good topic tonight, because this is something that everybody seems to be talking about.
Well, indeed it is. It is sort of an environmental disaster, if you will. Certainly has consequences like a disaster. So I think it fits in well with our theme.
Definitely. And it touches on so many different aspects of the response system, from first responders through public health and the larger health system. So it really touches many areas of the response network.
Absolutely, it does, in more ways than I think a lot of us actually are aware of.
We also have with us a guest from Memphis Fire Department. He's actually been on the show before in one of our programs talking about active shooter drills. And that's Lieutenant Jim Strickland, who is the infection control officer from Memphis Fire Department. Did I get that right, Jim?
Yes, you did.
Excellent. Well, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you here. And I'm going to lead off with a question to you, Jim. You're obviously in the midst of probably looking at what your system needs to do in case there's an Ebola patient in Memphis. What kind of things are you getting asked about right now?
The biggest thing I'm getting asked about is how we're supposed to handle these patients. What kind of precautions are we supposed to use? What kind of PPE, and the need for a protocol on how to do this. And what I've been telling people, we've had a protocol on the shelf for years, and that's just standard PPE and contact and droplet precautions. It's the thing that we use every day with every patient. It's this, wearing gloves, and if you know that they have some type of communicable disease, such as TB, it's putting a mask on yourself or putting a mask on them. It's making sure everything is wiped down after we transport a patient to a hospital. There's a lot of concern that we don't have enough PPE, or that we don't have the right kind of PPE. Well, we do. We have Tyvek suits. We have gloves. We have booties. We've got masks. We've got face masks with shields. We've got N95 respirators. So we've got everything in place. And it's basically really no different with these patients than it is with anyone else.
I think that's an important point. And Joe, we when you look at the Ebola virus from a medical standpoint and from a transmissibility standpoint, this is not I don't want to say it's not deadly and not serious to be concerned about, but it's not an easy disease to catch when you compare it to something like the seasonal flu that comes around every year this time of year.
Well, you're exactly right, Jamie. It's certainly a severe illness, but not one that is quite as easily transmitted as we want to think it is. It certainly is not like influenza and others that are droplet produced by coughing and sneezing and that sort of stuff. You've got to be in pretty close contact with these patients, and you've got to have a methodology to get their body fluids in contact with your body fluids. That's the only way really to get transmission there. So it's common sense approach to patients, just as Jim beautifully described. Using standard PPE works just fine and doesn't take any kind of special protocol for Ebola any more than it does for hepatitis C and HIV and the myriad of other infectious diseases that we're in contact with every day.
You know, Jim, it seems to me, and just looking at the news recently at the time we were recording this, there's a lot of fear factor going on out there. Just in the news recently was the deputy sheriff that was thought he was the second Ebola patient in the Dallas, Texas area because he had been outside the apartment of the patient zero there, and several days after he had actually been in the apartment, this deputy was there helping to serve papers to the family and get them information they needed with a public health official, and suddenly he gets a cold or some type of viral symptoms, and the first thing that he thinks of and everyone else seems to think is instantly he must have Ebola. But when you looked at the face of the facts, it really didn't hold up, did it?
No, it didn't, you know, and that's the thing that people have got to understand. Don't get me wrong, this is a legitimate concern, and people have the right to be fearful because we're all fearful of the unknown. But what people also have to realize is that we all, every one of us, every day, are exposed to unknown pathogens everywhere we go. Restaurants, theaters, grocery stores, doctor's offices, playgrounds. You get exposed to things that you don't even know you've been exposed to. And so we've just compounded this by 10. I think sometimes we do ourselves an injustice because we blow things out of proportion than bigger than they are. Granted, in Africa, it is a horrible problem to try to get under control. But here in the United States, you know, our borders are screened. Yesterday afternoon, I was on part of a teleconference call with the White House. President Obama spoke. They had all the key players from the CDC, from World Health Organization, from Homeland Security. I mean, they were all there. And their one thing is the key factor is that, you know, we're watching and we're looking every day and we're going to start checking people. And if you suspect that you have somebody that might have this, then let us know.
And I think that's important, Joe, because it seems to me that really you just have to take good medical history with these patients, be aware of what's going on in and around your community. And the combination of good assessment skills, good history taking, and just being that alert medical provider can make the difference between knowing what is really going on with this patient and raising that index of suspicion.
Well, I think you said it exactly correctly. You know, we have the ability currently to screen patients with a pretty simple process. I mean, if you haven't traveled to an endemic area, then, you know, the virus is not popping up all over Europe spontaneously. I mean, you know, you have to have been to the outbreak area to have even been exposed. And the symptomatology is pretty straightforward. Admittedly, it looks very much like flu, as did SARS and MERS and avian flu and all these others that we've dealt with over the last 10 years or so. This is really no different. And the approach is the same as we've practiced many times before. The precautions are the same as we've been practicing many times before. And I think the biggest thing we have to worry about is complacency and misinformation. And, you know, I've certainly watched the news cycle agitate over the last, you know, few days over all kinds of crazy stories and misinformation and quite honestly, just really bad journalism that have stirred fears amongst people and talked about all kinds of crazy and absurd conspiracy theories. Et cetera. And just as were proven with SARS and MERS and HIV, and, you know, the list is endless, none of that stuff they said then was true. None of that stuff is true now, and there's no big conspiracy going on with it. And the approach to the disease process is the same as it always should be. So, you know, I think part of what's really important on the part of the healthcare professionals and EMS in particular is we have an opportunity to calm people's fears and to approach folks in a professional manner and to not buy into the ridiculous stories on, you know, that you hear on television and on right and left wing radio and all kinds of other places about stuff. And certainly making certain that we are not caught up in that and promoting that. So we're not on Facebook, you know, going on about some story on, you know, the internet, because as we all know, everything on the internet's true. So, you know, I think it's just a professional level of behavior that keeps you from posting that stuff. You lend credibility to it when you post it, when you talk about it, when you comment on it. You know, just know the facts, know the details, and use that information to in a calming manner, not in an agitating manner.
And I'm interested to see, you know, Jim, you obviously are tied into the loop because you're an officer in a major metropolitan area that is tied into the resources of the federal government and Homeland Security and everything else. But there are a lot of smaller agencies out there that may not have an infection control officer that are struggling to figure out how to adapt their protocols to what's going on. And they look at the news and they see people in full hazmat turnout gear with the full moon suit and respirators and the whole nine yards. And it seems like it's just the responding departments are ramping up the fear level too. Is there any advice you can give to some of those smaller departments, people that are listening to the show that maybe didn't have an opportunity to get on that call that you were on that can alleviate some of their fears and point them in the right direction of their level of response?
Sure. I mean, there's a lot of good information out there, and you have to kind of, you know, push through the weeds and find. The CDC has put out Ebola guides for EMS, and it's very good. It's very concise and complete, and it starts out with your 911 call takers, and it gives them some questions to ask people if these people call in and think they've got Ebola, and it runs all the way through to what you need to do after you complete the call, and maybe if you've been exposed. It's with your local health departments. It's even calling your state health departments. It's getting with your hospitals. Almost every hospital that I know of, large or small, has an infection preventionist there. They're a wealth of information, and you get with them and you sit down and say, okay, we're a small department. We've got one ambulance. We've got one fire engine. What can we do for, you know, in the event? And you just sit down and draw out a very simple plan. And I can't stress enough that the standard contact and droplet precautions, the standard PPE that we've had on the shelves for years, the stuff that we use every day is our first line of defense. It's the first thing we're going to use, whether it's somebody that's got the flu or they've got Ebola, you know. And it's not buying into all the media hype and ramping this thing up to make it sound like it's the beginning of the apocalypse. I want everybody to take it seriously, but I think everybody just needs to kind of step back and take a deep breath and look at what they've got, look at what their resources are. You know, every city, county across this country should have an Office of Emergency Management or Office of Emergency Management that they can contact for things like this, for help, for assistance. It's out there. I'll be glad to help anybody that's got any questions.
I appreciate that, Jim. And, you know, you made a good point. I'm just looking at the CDC.gov site right now. Right on the top of the page is Ebola update. If you click on that right away, there's links there for signs and symptoms, and there's a section for healthcare workers that you can click through that has information on infection prevention and control for patients, for healthcare providers. It has everything that you could possibly look for and dig into. And then, as Jim said, you have your local emergency operations center and your local hospital staff to respond to. If no one else, Joe, the emergency department physicians are going to be very aware of this, I'm sure.
Oh, I think there's no question about that, Jamie. It's very high on everybody's radar right now. I think the issue is, you know, maintaining vigilance, not getting complacent, et cetera. And I think, you know, just due to my own personal biases with disaster medicine, you know, this is one of those kind of things that is not a disaster, but certainly could turn into one and certainly could have many of the same effects of a disaster. Whether or not we ever have another patient with Ebola or not, the simple behavior changes, fear, and misinformation wreak havoc on the ability of people to get their job done every day. They damage the infrastructure. We go to absurd measures for a risk that is minuscule as to be almost incalculable. You know, just those behavior changes are impacting healthcare infrastructure in potentially in negative ways, just the same way as an earthquake would disrupt healthcare in that area as well. So I think these kind of infectious disease related issues have potential to be to have many of the same effects as a large-scale disaster does, even though there's literally currently, you know, less than 5 patients in the entire country. And yet, you know, folks are going crazy over their infection control plan, and I need a new protocol, and I'm not going to touch any patient without, you know, a moon suit on and all kinds of other absurd over responses to an issue that doesn't warrant that kind of over response. It certainly, as Jim said, and I agree completely, warrants vigilance and a common sense approach using the tools that we have, which have been proven to work, and not moving along with misinformation and fear and everything else. All that does is make all the rest of it worse.
Jim, how does this reflect upon your existing plans for infection control and some kind of disease outbreak? Was this, I mean, obviously, this is something you've been preparing for in your job for the city of Memphis. But now that you've had this update, has it affected your plans at all? Has it made you reassess and change anything?
Oh, sure. We've looked at everything that's been put out. And we've drawn up a draft plan that just goes a little bit further into detail on what we're going to do and how we're going to operate if something like this should occur here in Memphis, or if we're possibly called maybe to do some type of transfer. You know, it's the whole alphabet, it's the whole nuts and bolts, but it's all based around our standard PPE precautions that we use every day. And I can't stress that enough. I mean, that's the beginning of it right there is, you know, gloving up, putting a mask on. You have to put a Tyvek suit on. It's doing whatever you have to do. And it goes through to when we get through and deconning ourselves and deconning the unit. And tomorrow morning, there's a large group of our EMS staff that's going to sit down and look at this plan and a lot of other stuff and thrash it out and see if we need to delete or add anything. I mean, we've even got it to the point to where we can show how to put on and take off PPE properly in a venue like this. But the CDC put out a great EMS checklist for Ebola preparedness, and it goes. It's a step by step, and it tells you everything that you need to do, everything you need to look at, from making sure you have enough PPE to making sure your department and staff are trained in how to properly prepare to protect, how to respond. So, I mean, like I said, there's a wealth of information out there. You just got to sit down and go through it and look and see what's going to fit your particular department.
You know, I think one thing you said, Jim, that I really like to hear, and I wonder if this is going to help some systems get better at it, is deconning the ambulance. Because, you know, there's been several studies out there that have shown that we really have, to date, done a poor job of cleaning our units appropriately between patients. And with this type of situation, that becomes even more important.
Well, that's something that I've been harping on my employees for quite some time, is that we have to do a better job, because all it takes is you getting that one immunocompromised patient in the back of our ambulance, and they contract something. And, you know, they've changed it from hospital-acquired infections now. It's now healthcare-acquired infections, which include us. So at some point in time, an infection preventionist is going to step out into an ambulance bay and look at one of our ambulances and go, that's where our infections are starting at. So this is something that we've got to improve. Everyone has to improve on how we clean our ambulances, our equipment, our rigs, just not because of Ebola, but because of after every run we make, you just don't know what you've exposed the back of that ambulance too.
And that's true. I mean, even if it's an enterovirus or any of the other illnesses that are floating around at this time of year, I mean, everyone's so focused on Ebola, and yet we have other things that are out there that are a little more of greater concern to me at watching these things. I'm sure that's the same for the two of you as well. Is that correct, Joe?
Oh, absolutely. I was just thinking that as you were bringing that up, that, you know, the timing of this Ebola scare is closely coincided with the onset of flu season. And obviously we're currently seeing around the country this enterovirus D68, which is a pretty aggressive respiratory virus that's affecting kids a lot and may or may not be associated with some sort of neurological issue in some of those kids. That's unclear just yet. So, you know, I think the message there is that it is an all hazards approach. You are much more likely to be exposed to influenza and potentially enterovirus than you are Ebola. But the precautions are all the same, and the handling of the patients is all the same. You know, I think it's a matter of sort of keeping things in perspective. We need to be screening folks for, you know, Ebola, but we also need to be screening folks for the flu and for the myriad of other, you know, potential infectious causes of their complaint, and handling those patients in a way that, you know, makes sense and protects us and protects the patient and protects the next patient that's going to be in that vehicle as well. So, as Jim mentioned earlier, it's not just the care of the patient and the transportation of the patient, but it's the putting stuff in place for screening the patient when they call dispatch in the first place, and identifying those patients as potentially infectious, you know, an infection-related complaint, so that we approach that patient with a appropriate caution and concern. And then after the patient is dropped off, adequate decon of the unit, et cetera, not knowing that, you know, that patient may have had influenza. And we're certainly much more likely to get influenza than we are Ebola. So I think that goes to maintaining that all hazards vigilance and that all hazards approach. It certainly says to me you want to be making sure that you're, you know, getting your flu shots for you and your family so that you can avoid what's potentially going to be a pretty aggressive flu season this year. And maintaining a knowledge base of what to look for and what's different, and not working off fear, but working off of knowledge and common sense in your approach to these patients and these transports, all the way down the line, from the time the phone rings at 911 until we've dropped the patient off and are back in service to the next patient.
Well, you know, Joe and Jim, I want to thank you both for coming on the show again and talking about this important topic. And one of the things that's leaping out to me here, Jim, and you talked about it, that you're working to actively train your organization to get the correct information out to them. And it just reminds me, Joe, of the important work that you guys are doing with Paragon Medical Education Group and all of the experiential training. This is just one more of those things that, you know, you can't always prepare for every type of or every individual emergency that's going to come along in disaster, but you can prepare for general things. And one of the ways you do that is through really aggressive and adequate training on a regular basis.
Oh, I think you're exactly right. And certainly there's value in, talking with folks about PPE, et cetera, but there's really, I think, great benefit in having folks actually, you know, don and doff the equipment and be absolutely certain they know how to use it. They understand the strengths and weaknesses of it, and they understand how to function while they are in that stuff. I mean, if they're wearing a face mask with an eye shield on it, you know, they need to be aware that those things sometimes fog up if you don't put them on just right. And, you know, it's important to have got that all worked out before you're trying to do a critical procedure on a patient and, you know, your eye shield's all fogged up the whole time. So
yeah,
there's great value in doing that as realistically as you can.
You agree, Jim?
Yes, I do. I feel like, you know, wherever you work, you need to dust off those books that contain those policies and protocols, and you need to review them. And then we need to treat every patient that we make contact with as a potential source for some type of unknown infection. It's routine. Every day is a routine as far as our PPE and our standard precautions. We train so that, just like being on the fire side, you do drills, air mask drills, put on your turnouts, putting that SCBA on. So it's no different here. Being on the EMS side, it's donning and doffing this equipment, being familiar with it, know what to do when, you know, you have a rip or a tear, or if you become contaminated with suspected patient's body fluids, and you move on. You finish out that call, and you take care of business.
I couldn't agree more. And again, I want to thank both of you for coming on the show tonight. Jim, where can folks reach you? Can they get you through just going like to the main site for Memphis Fire Department and reach
they
out
sure
to you
can.
That way?
My numbers are on there. I work Monday through Friday from 7 to 3, I'll be glad to help anybody out that needs some guidance.
All right, and we'll have links to all that in the show notes for this episode over at disasterpodcast.com. Joe, where can folks find Paragon Medical Education Group and you guys?
Well, Paragon is on the web at paragonmedicalgroup.com and Facebook as well under the same moniker. And we do have a Twitter feed at ParagonMedEDU. And you can also get in touch with us through the podcast site as well, disasterpodcast.com.
Yeah, and we do want to, again, just thank you all for your support of this show. We couldn't bring this show to the community and the audience out there without the support from Paragon. So, you know, head over, check out their resources, find out what they offer, and look for ways that you can bring this incredible experiential training to your organization. You're not going to be sorry, and it's going to really better prepare you for that major event, that once-in-a-career event that could come along to your community at any time. So you really, you know, preparedness and proper training is the key. Anyway, I'm Jamie Davis. You can find me under the handle PodMedic just about everywhere in social media. So look me up, friend, or follow me on most places that way. And of course, you can always find me over at disasterpodcast.com. And I want to encourage you to go over there and leave some comments on recent episodes. We've had some great topics we've covered recently on everything from dealing with active shooters and hostile intruders in facilities and EMS in warm zones and all kinds of topics in having to do with various types of disaster and major event response. And you can be a part of that by leaving a comment on any of the articles over there. We will respond back to you. Let us know what you want to see or hear more of. Let us know what you like. Send us your questions, your ideas for future episodes. We want to hear from you. And you can do all of that over at disasterpodcast.com. That's it for me on this episode. I'm going to sign off now for my co-host Sam Bradley and the rest of the gang here at Disaster Podcast, as well as the folks over at Paragon Medical Education Group. We want to remind you that, as we've talked about in this episode and many of our episodes, when you look at disaster medicine, you realize that it's not your everyday medicine.